I'll read you from Joshua 4. When the whole nation had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Choose 12 men from among the people, one from each tribe, and tell them to take up 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan, from right where the priest stood, to carry them over with you, and put them down at the place where you stay tonight." So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, "Go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve a sign among you in the future. When your children ask you, 'What do these stones mean?' tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever." So the Israelites did as Joshua commanded them. They took the 12 stones from the middle of the Jordan according to the number of the tribes of Israel, as the Lord had told Joshua, and they had carried them over with them to put their camp where they put them down. Joshua set up the 12 stones that had been in the middle of the Jordan at the spot where the priest who carried the Ark of the Covenant had stood, and they are there to this day.
So this morning, unfortunately, I think Houston's reading is a little symbolic of what's going to go on. I've got a lot to get through, and I'm going to do it as quickly as possible. So bear with me. Another thing is everybody relax. I want this to be more of a conversation. Today I'm not going to give you anything profound. I'm going to tell you a little about my trip to Saba, which I know feels like a million years ago. And then I'm going to maybe tell you one of the most important things that this year of mission trips has taught me. This last year, as many of you know, I've been to Scotland, I've been to Saba, a year before that, to Africa. And through those three trips, there's one thing that's really struck me. After going through a few of them, there's one thing that's really stuck with me, and I wanted to talk about that for just a second today. But first, let's talk a little bit about my Saba trip. But while I do that, I want you all to be thinking about one question. And I'm going to ask you this question, so I want you to come up with an answer, which is why I'm giving you a minute to do it. So if there was, God forbid, a house fire, everyone was safe, all your pets were out, everything was good, but you could only grab one item. There was only one thing that you could get out of the house before everything was destroyed. What would it be? And I want you to be thinking about that. I'm going to ask some of you what that item is in a moment. So if you'll pull up that first slide. So, as many of you know, I was in a 5-square-mile island called Saba. Not Saba, which is how I pronounced it for like 4 months leading up to this. My bad on that one. It is Saba. It's part of the Dutch Caribbean. It is a Dutch Commonwealth. For the longest time, it was a Dutch colony. Recently, it became a Dutch Commonwealth. Basically meaning, the best way to look at it is, as Tennessee is to the United States, so Saba is to the Dutch Kingdom. If you'll go to that next slide for me. When I say 5-square-mile island, it's a 5-square-mile island, and we say this over and over and over again, but I'm going to tell you, it is physically impossible to imagine just how small this place is without being there. It has a population of 1,900. 1,900, and that's it. That's everybody. So when elections happen, you have two political parties made up of 1,900 people divided between the two, and they are very serious about it. So just imagine a culture where that's everybody. So when you say you know everybody, it's not like knowing everybody in your community. You know everybody in your state. You know everybody in the surrounding cities. So, as you can see, the centerpiece of Saba is Mount Scenery. Mount Scenery is actually the highest point in the Dutch kingdom. And it's on this 5-square-mile island. Saba is a volcanic island. And when I say it is a stone in the middle of the ocean, it is a stone in the middle of the ocean. There's actually not a single natural beach on the island. There was one beach where actually they had the sand brought in to create kind of a small swimming area for people to play in. But it's not an island like we think of. You know, it's not sandy beaches and palm trees. It goes straight up from sea level to the highest point in the Dutch kingdom. It is a mountain in the middle of the ocean. There are actually steps carved into the rock where, as things were shipped in before the modern port was put in, it was the job of the sailors to carry it up a few thousand stairs to get finally to what's called the bottom, which is the, if you will, the capital of Saba. And there are stories of them bringing goats, grandbaby pianos. I would not want to have had that job. Donkeys. If it came onto Saba, it came up these stairs on the backs of someone. If you go to this next slide. So this is actually a picture of some of the activities we did as a part of Child Focus. The organization we were working with was, if you will, the Boys and Girls Club of Saba. But it's so pivotal on this island because there isn't anything else. There's 1,900 people, and there's 5-square-mile island, and most of it is just rock that you actually cannot build anything on. It's actually one of the greatest engineering feats that roads were even able to be built on this island. For many years, they told the islanders, there's no way. It is impossible to build roads. And not until the last, I want to say, 30 years were they able to even put roads on this island. So no movie theater, no bowling alley, no, you know, 3-4 restaurants. That's it. So a lot of these kids, during the summer months especially, they don't really have anything to do. You know, they don't have backyards because their backyard is a mountain. There's a few sports fields that they're allowed to use in different parts of the community, but their families don't have vehicles. Most of the way that they travel is by hitchhiking or by the school buses. There's really just not a lot for them. So this organization called Child Focus, what they do is they put together basically youth events throughout the year. But that culminates in 2 weeks in the summer that they call summer school. And what this is kind of a two-week camp where the children go home at night. But during the day, we'll have a morning devo, we'll have different activities. It might be arts and crafts, it might be a hike, which they really didn't like, as you can imagine. You know, it might be playing soccer, it might be archery, which they absolutely loved. And this was actually a part of the Rock and Water program, which I might mention that later, but Child Focus is so pivotal, and the community absolutely loves it because these children really do not have any other outlet. And this island absolutely loves Lipscomb. It's hilarious because as Lipscomb comes to the island for these 2 weeks, all of a sudden Lipscomb shirts are everywhere. Everybody has one on. People have one on that you have no idea actually how they got it there because we've only ever given out shirts to the children. It's confusing. But they absolutely love it because there really isn't enough people on the island to put on this program. And it's the only thing for the children to do during the summer. So if you'll go to the next slide. Now I just kind of have a few pictures of the island itself to let you get an idea of the mountain that this is. This is actually called Whale's Head. I wonder why. This is actually a peak that overlooks what's called the bottom. So, as you saw on the map, Saba's made up of a handful of different cities, communities. They're not really anything we're familiar with. But the capital, if you will, is a small city called The Bottom. It is actually in a bowl, if you will, surrounded by these different mountain peaks, one of which is Whale's Head. So if you go to the next slide, this is actually two of the boys from Child Focus, two of the children that we actually hung out with a lot. And we were encouraged as counselors to hang out with the children after the day camp had ended. At 3 o'clock, camp ends, but after that, a lot of the kids, especially the older kids, would still be with us. You know, would still go on hikes, would hang out at the community center where we were staying. They might just walk around town with us. But this is actually from the very top of Whale's Head, the picture that you saw right before. And it's absolutely beautiful. If you go to the next picture, this is from Whale's Head. This is from basically what you just saw, taking a picture down onto the bottom, like I told you about. And as you see to the left of the picture, that's Mount Scenery. And then as you see, you know, the bottom completely surrounded by different mountains. And every one of the buildings is made out of the same architecture, this white building. These red roofs, and it creates a really fantastic feel. Everything feels like it belongs. Everything feels like it fits together, and everything feels like it's built onto the island instead of into the island. It feels like it's a part of the island. If you go to the next slide. So this is actually the trail up to Mount Scenery. Mount Scenery actually goes through 5 different climate zones because it's going from nearly sea level to, like I said, the highest point in the Dutch Kingdom. It goes through desert, forest, rainforest, something and something. It's ridiculous, is the moral of the story. So you see, this is the trail. The first picture you saw opening up the slide, that is actually the Sabin flower. That yellow flower there is actually the official flower of Saba. And that's actually a picture taken of one of those flowers on this trail. Thank you, Mike. So you see that picture. This is actually at the bottom of the trail looking up at Mount Scenery. And you see it's just jungle. A lot of these places, because of the way the rock is, you can't build anything there. You know, most of the island, it's impossible to actually make it usable ground. So much of it is still just jungle. So if you go to the next picture for me, this is actually one of the little girls who decided that she wanted to climb Mount Scenery with us. And then you see, this is more of our group climbing Mount Scenery, and you can see it's just jungle. If you go to the next slide, this is actually one of the groups with Rock and Water, which was a self-defense and self-control class that was put on for some of the older boys the second week of camp. If you go to the next picture, this is Greco. Greco's insane. kid's absolutely crazy. And quickly, I'll tell you a beautiful story about Greco. Like a lot of these kids, Greco doesn't come from the best family situation. Very distant parents. Only his mother is actually involved. Many of these children come from different places in Central America. They move to Saba for various reasons, generally to get away from whatever situation they were in before. Greco was there only with his mother, and Greco never left the place where we were staying. We were staying in this community center behind the Catholic Church in Hell's Gate, which is another part of Saba. And Greco could not bring himself to leave because he could not understand this opportunity where he could be around so many people who loved him and who paid attention to him and would talk to him. And I remember one night, most of the group was going crab hunting. A few of us were staying back to work on some stuff. Most of them were going crab hunting, and Greco was right on their heels. Like I said, I don't think we were ever without Greco, no matter what we were doing. As you can see, he would even occasionally catch a nap on this is actually the water collection system, which I'll talk about a little in a second. And he's right on their heels, and they tell him, you know, Greco, it's late, you know, it's almost midnight, you know, you need to go home, and you can't go with us, and we don't want to have to, you know, be watching out for you while we climb these rocks and looking for these crabs. And, you know, they told him, you know, Greco, not tonight. And, you know, Greco just burst out in tears. And you know, he's just on the floor just squalling as they walk off. And there's a few of us left there, and I sat down with him. I was like, Greco, what's wrong? And he's like, you know, they left me. They don't care about me. They don't want me. I was like, Greco, no. It's like, we love you, Greco. And I explained to him that, you know, tonight, what they were doing, he just couldn't come with them. But I kept telling him over and over, no, Greco, we care. Greco, we love you. And when I said those words, he looked up and he said, y'all, you love me? I was like, yes, Greco, of course. And immediately the tears stopped. And he said, I never imagined that y'all could love me. And he stopped and he got up. With a smile on his face, he went home and he turned and he said, I'll see you tomorrow morning. And you know, you could just tell these kids come from these situations where no attention is paid to them. You know, there's nothing for them to do. There's not even a backyard to play in. There are parents that have enough problems of their own and are generally fleeing even worse situations. And these children just don't have anyone there to care for them. So if you go to the next slide. So this is actually hiking down to the one natural beach. And what I mean by that is it's just rock. It's not actually a beach as you would think of. But here you see a great example of just absolutely desert. And you know, a few pictures before you see rainforest, and here we see desert. Saba is made up of just every climate zone that you can possibly think of. Again, another picture of that. I mean, this looks like something out of Arizona. I mean, it's so fascinating to be on an island that's so small, yet is such diverse ecosystem. So if you go to the next, Dad's laughing at me. I don't know if Arizona actually looks like that. I guess it doesn't. this is two of the twins. We call them the twin terrors. And they begged me to take this picture. But Brandon and then his brother are two twins. And like I said, we did call them the twin terrors. And another story about them. The two of them very quickly became like Greco, where they wouldn't leave our side. Everywhere we went, they wanted to be there. And it's so ironic because at the beginning of the camp, these are the two kids that there pretty much has to be a counselor by their side every moment. Because if they have an opportunity to get in trouble, they're going to take it. You know, getting in fights, stealing another kid's ball, whatever it may be, you have to have someone by their side at all times. And you very quickly realize that that's their goal. You know, their goal isn't to get in fights. Their goal isn't to steal from another child. Their goal is to make sure someone is beside them at every time. And we found this out later in the week. Finally, they started coming by the community center where we were staying, like Greco, and just for hours and hours, whether it was, you know, playing Frisbee or just sitting and listening to us talk. And then finally, one day, their dad came to get them. And this was not late in the day. You know, he was slurring his words. He could barely stand. You could tell that physically it was everything he could do to get the few hundred yards from his house to the community center where we were at. And you could just see their eyes. You could just see just the fear and the sadness that they had, knowing that he had found them and they had to go back. A few days later, we finally meet their mom, and it may be 10 in the morning, it's much the same situation. And all of a sudden you begin to get a picture of what they're going through. And you realize the reason they're acting the way they do is not because they're mean, not because they're bad kids. It's because having someone by their side, having someone who's taking an interest in what they're doing, is something that they don't experience the other 50 weeks out of the year. If you go to the next slide, here is actually more of the trail. You see just more forest here. This is actually on the way up to Whale's Head. I'm going to try to get through these a little faster. If you go to the next one, here we see, like I said, the beach where they brought the sand in for. If you go ahead and go to the next one, and you see just how absolutely beautiful the water is and the surrounding peaks. Is that the last one? Okay, I thought it was. Good. So like I said, if there are any questions, feel free to ask. I wish I had all day to tell you all of these wonderful stories. But the biggest thing is these kids, they just need someone to take time with them. They need someone to care. They need someone to realize that they exist. And unfortunately, on this island, that's something very difficult for them to find. So, to get back to the question I asked before, house is on fire, everybody's safe, you can only get one item, what's it going to be? Somebody. I will call on people. I would like to remind you, you know, sometimes professors say the clock doesn't dismiss you, I do. Kind of the same aspect here. So, somebody, anybody, what's the one item you're grabbing? Driver's license, okay. USB. I get pictures and information and stuff like that on the USB. Yes, Kaylee. Bible. What else? Okay. Yes, for the sake of everybody. Anybody else? Cell phone. Okay. So, let's think about all this stuff. So we talk about all these things that, you know, we'd be grabbing. What's the stuff that you would be most upset about losing? What's the stuff that when it was all said and done and whatever you chose to grab in that moment? And I purposely, you know, make you think of it in this way so that you think, okay, what do I need right now? But what's the stuff that when it's all said and done, you're going to wish you had grabbed? What's the stuff that, because you can't replace? Yes. Yeah. Pictures. Yeah. What else? Antiques, pictures. Asking some people yesterday, they said, you know, wedding ring, or they said a certain picture, or an antique or a piece of jewelry passed down. Generally, the stuff that we're going to miss the most have some emotional connection for us. They're stuff that can't be replaced. And, you know, we read from Joshua as they set up this monument. So finally, they're crossing the Jordan. Israel is finally crossing the Jordan. It's this great day, and God is calling them to remember just what He had done for them. So He says, set up this monument so that whenever you see it, you will remember what I have done for you today. So I had to sing the song, Come Thou Fount, for a very specific reason. So there's a line in there that I bet most of us don't know what it means. It says, here I raise my Ebenezer. Does anyone know what that means? What is an Ebenezer? Exactly. It's a stone. It's a touchstone. It's a monument. It's a thing of remembrance. And if you'll think with me for a second, we all have these. We all have these crossing Jordan moments in our life. We all have these moments where we see firsthand the power of God, where we feel God. Another example is the Passover feast. You know, God sets up this feast so that every year Israel might remember. that He brought them out of Egypt, that He brought them out of slavery. And so every year they sit down to remember this. Or for us as Christians, the Lord's Supper. You know, every week we sit down and remember the sacrifice of Christ. There are these things in our lives. There are these touchstones. There are these Ebenezers. There are these things that draw us back to something. And maybe it's a picture. Well, here's something better. Let me give you some examples. This is my Ebenezer. This is my touchstone. And in here I have some of the most important things to me. My great-grandfather, Granddaddy Morris's dog tags from the Second World War. I have Granddaddy Bill's ring. I have journals. I have pictures. I have shells from Saba. I have bracelets from Liberia. I have letters that people gave me before my first mission trip. I have rings that children gave to me and Sarah in Liberia. In here are some of the most important things to me. And every time I look at them, and I have envelopes for all of my mission trips, and inside are the silliest little things. Inside are ticket stubs. Inside are ID badges for the school in Scotland. Inside are rubber bracelets from a child. Inside are hairbands. Inside are the silliest little things. The stuff that if they were sitting on our dresser, we would never think to grab them in the event of a house fire, but because of what they represent, they mean everything. So why do we need these? You know, when this situation happens, when Israel is crossing the Jordan, you know most of them think, this is crazy. These 12 rocks are crazy. How could we ever forget what has happened here today? How could we ever forget? How could this ever cross from our mind? And how many events in our lives are just like that? How many events in our lives where for whatever reason we feel like, there's no way I could forget this. There's no way this emotion could ever pass from me. I don't know about you, but when I get back from mission trips, I'm so fired up. I'm so close to God. I'm so emotionally energized. I feel like this could never end. This could never go away. Or sometimes in our lives we feel so close to God. We feel like that relationship is so strong that we think this could never fade. But what happens? It does. What happened to Israel? They forget. What happened to Israel after they crossed the Red Sea? And God sets up the Passover to remind them what He did for them. They forget. What happens with the Lord's Supper that we take every week? We go out afterwards and we forget. And that's why it's so important. And that's why these touchstones, that's why these Ebenezers, that's why this song, here I raise my Ebenezer, here I put this touchstone, here I raise this monument. That's why it's so important. Because those memories do fade. Those emotions are fleeting. So maybe this is more physical, practical advice. You know, what do we do to create those touchstones? And maybe it is something physical. Maybe it is something that we put in a box. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a practice. Maybe it's every day we wake up and we read the same passage from the same Bible that we always have. Or maybe we wake up and we write in the same journal. Or maybe we wake up and we see the same note card or we see the same picture, whatever it may be. Where do we set up these touchstones? Where do we set up these monuments? God clearly calls us to. How many times through the history of the church and the history of Israel has He done this? Has He set up something to draw His people back because He understands that our memory is fleeting? That these emotions are fleeting. So that's my challenge to you today. Where do you set up these touchstones? Where do you set up these practices or these physical items, these Ebenezers, that bring you back to Him when you're the farthest away? Where do you set them up so that when you go back there, you're reminded of that emotion? You're reminded of that place. You're reminded of that connection. You're reminded of those people. Where do we set those up so that we make sure to never forget? You know, the Lord's Supper, this do in remembrance of me. What do we do to make sure that we always remember? If you haven't taken the opportunity to allow Jesus into your life, if you haven't taken the opportunity to set up the touchstone, the Ebenezer of baptism, and you would like to do that, or maybe if emotionally you have just moved away and you need the help of this church to bring you back, if you need this church to act as that touchstone, will you come while we stand and sing?